Well, good morning. I'd like to welcome you to Mother's Day at Bridgewater as well. My name is Kevin, and I get to be one of the pastors here. I'd love to get to meet you if I haven't met you already. And the truth is, if I have met you already, I'd probably like to meet you again. I am working on getting all of the names down. I am new here as well. Again, a couple months in, but I'm still working on it. So I appreciate your patience and your grace you can extend to me that way. We're honored that you chose to be here today, even if your mom made you come. I know that happens sometimes on Mother's Day. I hope that with the songs and the feed and that bumper video, I think it's already been worth the price of admission. So you're already getting what you came for, and I'm trying to somehow try to follow those things up. But we know that for many of you in here, Mother's Day is kind of an exciting day. It's a good day. You feel honored. You get your family together and all of those kinds of things. And then for others in the room, you wouldn't exactly call it an excitement when it comes to Mother's Day. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. And we do want to acknowledge, like the bumper, consider how today might affect the women in the room. Just to take a second and think through the relationship that women have with motherhood. We know that there are women in the room who are not moms. There are women here who are anticipating motherhood. There are women here who have experienced pregnancy but don't have children or any living children. There's women here experiencing motherhood that they planned and pursued. There's those of you women in here that are experiencing motherhood that you didn't plan and you didn't pursue. There's women in here that are moms who chose to raise children that aren't theirs. There's moms experiencing motherhood who are raising children with a spouse. There's moms in here that are in the middle of raising children by themselves. There's moms in here where your days of raising kids are past and you're excited about that. There's moms that are here that your days are past and you're wondering where you fit in now. There's even moms in here that thought their days were past, but for some reasons they needed to come back into motherhood as a grandma. And I'm sure we're never going to name all of those experiences, but those are some of the dynamics that affect how you see today. And it causes to do a lot of things. It causes you to question your identity. It causes you to consider what your role is. It can even make you regret or appreciate the choices and the plans that have been made in your life or changed in your life. But no matter where you find yourself on that spectrum, it's easy for us to long for a different stage. Sometimes we want to turn the clock back and do it again. Other times we want to take the clock ahead and get out of the stage that we're in. Sometimes it's the choice of others that makes motherhood difficult. Sometimes it's our choices that make motherhood difficult. It's easy and maybe even natural for us to feel that God is closer at some seasons, and then in some seasons he seems more distant. It's easy really to wonder if he even sees your situation at all. And if he does he care? Does God understand? This is the life that women are living in the stages of life. But those of you who aren't women in the room, myself included, we go through times where we wonder if God sees us and whether if he knows what we're doing, if he even cares about what we're going through. So even if you're not a woman in here, I trust there's some truth that you're going to learn and we can grow from. There's something for us all this morning. We're going to go to a portion of scripture where we're going to learn some two different women, how God views and responds to their situation. And then we're going to hear from a woman in our church, her story about how God met her in different seasons of her being a mom. This first woman that we come in contact with in the scripture is one who is not able to conceive. And she's living at a time where, in a culture where women were kind of their value hinged on their ability to bear children. Not only that, but she had been promised by God himself that she would not only be a mother, but a mother of an innumerable amount of descendants. And 10 years had passed since she heard that promise. 10 years she waited for what God promised her and had nothing. And it felt unbearable. And so she anticipated motherhood, but it didn't seem like she was going to be able to experience it. And that's where we're going to jump in, and we're going to look in Genesis chapter 16. Genesis is the first book of the Bible, and just to throw this out, the Bible is not just one book, it's a library of books and letters, and the first book is Genesis. Genesis chapter 16 is where we're going to be this morning. It'll also be up on the screens for us, so let's jump into the story here. It says, "Now Sarai, and Abram's wife, was not able to bear children for him, but she had an Egyptian servant named Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, 'The Lord has prevented me from having children. Go, sleep with my servant. Perhaps I can have children through her.' And Abram agreed to Sarai's proposal. So Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian servant, and gave her to Abram as his wife. This happened 10 years after Abram was settled in the land of Canaan. So Abram had sexual relations with Hagar, and she became pregnant. But when Hagar knew she was pregnant, she began to treat her mistress Sarai with contempt. Then Sarai said to Abraham, 'This is all your fault.'" And let me just pause there. Men, it's been happening a long time. For some 4,000 years. But she's not all wrong. She's not all right. She says, "This is your fault. I put my servant into your hands, and now she's pregnant, and she treats me with contempt. The Lord will show who's wrong, you or me." And Abram replied, "Look, she's your servant, so deal with her as you see fit." Then Sarai treated Hagar so harshly that she finally ran away. Just to identify the characters in our particular story, is Sarai is the first one, later to be known as Sarah. She's married to Abram, childless, yet promised a child. Then there's Abram, later known as Abraham. He was chosen by God to have a special relationship. God made a covenant with Abram, would be Abraham, to give him a plot of land, to give him descendants, the plot of land we know as Israel today. He would pretty much relate to the world through Abraham and his descendants. You can read that story throughout the whole Old Testament on into the New Testament. And then we have Hagar. He's a slave of Abram. And Sarai, an Egyptian, likely a gift from Pharaoh, the ruler of Egypt, when Abraham and Sarai were traveling through Egypt in Genesis chapter 12. Sarai is dealing with infertility. That is not something that may be uncommon to some women in the room. I just want to say that I can't take that away from you, but I want to let you know that God is with you in that. And that we, as a church, would like to be with you in that. We'd love to be able to talk with you through that. We'd love to be able to connect you with somebody who is going through it or has gone through a very similar scenario, maybe even connect you to some other options that may be available to you, and really to surround you with a community that can help you process through those things. So we understand that Sarah is in that situation. She finds herself in this spot, that she was living in a society where women were valued based on their able to produce children, but she couldn't. And so she comes up with a plan, which wasn't right. However, it would have been culturally accepted. It's just one of the unfortunate truths of the day. It would have made sense culturally that Hagar would have no rights to the child. It would be Sarah's. But she did this after 10 years of God had promised that he would give her a child. So rather than operate according to God's promise, she operated according to the difficulty she was going through. So she hatched a plan, and it involved her Egyptian slave, Hagar. And in Hagar, as a slave, it's interesting to note that Abram and Sarai never really refer to her by name, but only by her nationality or her position. She is essentially a tool for them to use as they see fit. And how does that plan go? It doesn't go well. It only adds to the drama and to the difficulty. And there's now strife between Sarah and Hagar, and ultimately a plan that Abram should have said no to from the beginning. But they find themselves struggling, and so Sarah has come to resent her servant, and the servant treated her with contempt, and now they've even lost the child as Hagar leaves and runs away. And it just kind of brings up to this truth that no matter where you find yourself, the only thing worse than waiting on God is wishing that you had. The only thing worse than waiting on God is wishing. It's hard sometimes to be patient. There's seasons that are really hard, but there's a cost for impatience. Things have not worked out so well for Abram and Sarai. And Sarah made a choice that she would come to regret as a result, and has resulted in her using and abusing another human being. But we're going to take a second and zoom in on Hagar, the female slave who's been forced to function as a surrogate and really would be compelled to give up the rights to her child. Again, we can't hardly fathom. It's even hard to read, maybe. And I just want to point out some things in this passage, that there is misogyny and racism in this passage. That's hard for our 2024 minds to contain. The stories in the Bible are not about elevating characters in the Bible, as if that's how you live godly lives, but it's about the God who saves them. The point of the stories in the Bible is about God who saves them. Tim Keller, the late pastor and author, wrote it this way: the Bible isn't a book of virtues, but a book of gospel. The very best human beings in the world are morally and spiritual failures. Halos don't fit us perfectly, neither do horns. Abram was passive and didn't stand up for what was right. The point of the Bible is not to look at Abraham, but to look at God. And the story that God is going to reveal himself to this woman is everything that Abraham was not. Hagar heads back to Egypt. She runs away, heads back to Egypt. Why? Because she was used and she retaliated. She was abused and she ran. She was in that spot because of choices of other people and how she responded to the choices of other people. She was not always wrong, but she wasn't always right either. Life, certainly, if you would have asked her, dealt her a terrible, awful hand. And so she bailed. She feels alone. She left a land where she was just property. And actually going back to a more familiar land where she would be property. Because that's what the culture was. And does God know? Where is God here? Does he understand? Does he care? Let's keep reading in Genesis chapter 16, verse 7 and 8 says this: the angel of the Lord found Hagar beside the spring of water in the wilderness along the road to Shur. Shur is on the way between Canaan and Egypt. And the angel said to her, "Hagar, Sarai's servant, where have you come from and where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai," she replied. So after all of the trauma, she feels alone in the wilderness, displaced from Egypt, now displaced from her second home, pregnant for a baby she really didn't even ask for. And verse 7 says that the angel of the Lord found her there, and he speaks to her. And I think this is where we come up to a first declaration that no matter where you find yourself and what season of life you find yourself, you can make this declaration: I am not alone because God sees me. God finds her, he pursues her out into the wilderness and interacts with her. My question first is, why should that be reassuring to us? Why should that be reassuring to you women in this room on Mother's Day? Why should that truth be reassuring? This is not going to come as a surprise to you. I am not a mom. I don't even want the role. So I knew as I'm coming into this message this week that I was going to have to do a little bit of scientific research to get the true heart and mind of a mother to enter that could be difficult. So I did what is, again, very theological and very very scientific research. I watched a few episodes of The Middle. If you're not familiar with the TV show, it's a series that's set in Indiana. It follows the Heck family, kind of a lower middle class family, and just as they kind of live life every day of home life and raising kids and work, all those kind of things. The series is narrated by the mom, Frankie. And there were several Mother's Day episodes. I will leave that to your YouTube pleasure to find out, as it was mine. But in one episode specifically, there's some found insightful, is that the Mother's Day episode in which the kids get up way too early on Sunday morning and bring mom breakfast in bed, because that's what you should do, right? And the breakfast consisted of undercooked eggs, burnt toast, waffles, and even a piece of bologna. The gifts they gave were like a wet macaroni frame picture frame thing that obviously was just made, a handmade card, and a verbal card because the teenager neglected to go get a real one. In the process of all the things happening, and really kids being more selfish than loving, the tray gets spilled all over Frankie. So she's trying to stay positive. She gets up. She's cleaning off. She says she's going to go into the shower. And when she goes into the shower, she says, listen, I'm really excited to get my real gifts when I come out. And at that, the family looks. And they make a mad dash to the drugstore because that's the only store that's open on Sunday morning. And they come back and they give her the gift in the drugstore bag with wrapping paper sticking out of it because they ran out of time to wrap it. The gift of an inflatable foot soaker, which I'm sure all moms want. But Frankie has a realization as she remembers the day. She's an afterthought. And I wonder, moms, if you've ever had a season in your life, or maybe you're in the middle of one, where you had expectations that life would be different, that you had expectations that it should be different, and it's not. And maybe you find yourself like Frankie or even Hagar, and you're experiencing life and motherhood, but you don't know if God sees or cares. And maybe you interpret that difficult circumstance to mean that you're an afterthought to God. I think that's the power of this story. That in this account, we see that that's not the kind of God he is. Difficulty and discomfort aren't signs of his absence, but of his presence. We remind ourselves of his goodness and his pursuit of us. The angel of the Lord showed up and talked with Hagar in the middle of her difficulty. And that's not all that happens in the passage. We keep reading. Verse 9 through 12 says this: the angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit to her authority. And then he added this: I give you more descendants than you can count. And the angel also said, you are now pregnant and will give birth to a son. And you're to name him Ishmael, which means God hears. The Lord has heard your cry of distress. Now God sends Hagar back to something that's really hard. And I'm not encouraging you or challenging you to go back to an abusive scenario. Please do that with all wisdom and a counsel. But I think we have to admit that there's a lot of times when things are hard for us and we just rather bail. And we can't quite see it coming to conclusion, or we can't quite figure it out and it's a little difficult. We like to step away instead of in. And we don't really think about that sometimes life's sweetest moments are tied to life's most difficult ones. And we miss out on what God has for us. As followers of Jesus, the absence of problems, it isn't the absence of problems, but the presence of Jesus in the middle of those problems that makes the difference. It gives us a different kind of hope. It allows us to endure differently. Moms, you know this. You allow your kids to go through some things that are a little bit difficult, a little bit challenging, that will grow them up. And why? And you'll come alongside of them to encourage them, to continue nurturing them when they face those difficulties or challenges. So God sends her back with a promise. A promise that she's going to have innumerable amounts of descendants. What a promise for a woman of this culture and this time. And certainly a promise for a slave. There would have been no future. And then he has a little gender reveal. I don't know if she wanted to know what her baby was, but she's going to know. God reveals, congratulations, it's a boy. And then says, and name him Ishmael, which means God hears. Because the Lord heard her cry. He saw her tears. And he met her there. And it kind of comes to the second declaration that we can make in whatever season we find ourselves in. I am not alone because God hears me. Hagar felt all alone. And then something amazing happened. It was amazing enough that God saw her and found her there and that God heard her. That's amazing. But there's more in this passage. The new kind of relationship that's formed between Hagar and the Lord. This incredible moment comes out in verse 13 to 16. It says this, it says, thereafter, Hagar used another name to refer to the Lord who spoke to her. She said, you are the God who sees me. She also said, have I truly seen the one who sees me? So that well was named Beer Lahairoi, which means the well of the living one who sees me. It can still be found between Kadesh and Beer. So Hagar gave Abram a son, and Abram named him Ishmael. And Abram was 86 years old when Ishmael was born. Something fascinating about this couple of verses that Hagar names God. If you look through the Old Testament, New Testament, God is usually the one that gives names. God is usually the one that names himself. He named Ishmael, he named Isaac, he named Abraham. He named Israel. And usually he gives the names that people refer to him. But in this case, God is given a name. And it wasn't by a king, it wasn't by a prophet, it wasn't by a warrior, a priest. It was by a servant, a foreigner, an outsider, a woman. And she gives them the name, the God who sees, El Roy, the God who sees me. She knows what it's like to not be seen. She's understood that as a servant, that she was just property. That Abraham and Sarah, I don't even use her name, just her nationality and her position. So what can you and I do? What can you moms do when you find yourself in all kinds of seasons? I hope that you can declare that God sees you and hears you over that season of your life. And it made me wonder as I thought through it and prep for what we're talking about today, if you've ever felt like you were heard by God. A week into my freshman year of high school, my family moved from Michigan to West Seneca, New York, just outside of Buffalo. And got to, obviously me moving is a new school. The school was a week in. So I was the new kid for sure. And like most schools, we were assigned a locker for all of our stuff. And this was my first encounter with a locker. I just hadn't had one in my schooling up so far at this point. This is my first encounter. And as I had all of my books for the year and things that I needed and my locker combination hand, I went to my locker and tried to get in. I put my books down and tried to get in. I could not get in. And I'm feeling a little flustered by it because it seems like everybody else can do it and there's some reason I can't do it. And now the bell rings and now everyone's in homeroom. And so I walk into homeroom carrying all my books like a dork. And I walk in and I happen to walk in the front of the room, not the back of the room door. I happen to walk in the room door that's in the front of the room. Now I'm feeling everyone stare at me as I walk to my seat. Attempt number two comes after homeroom of before I'm headed to my first class. I'm trying to get in. I cannot. Multiple attempts, the principal finally comes down the hall and unlocks with a key so I can get to my first class, which I am again late to. I come back out after that class. This lock is not working. I cannot get in. So I carry the rest. It happens pretty much all day. My sister comes and gives it a shot. She can't do it. Other people are feeling bad for me now. They come up and try to unlock the thing. It's not working for them either. I felt a little bit better, but I'm still a dork. The day finally comes to an end as I completely feel like a loser wondering why we made this move at all. And I got home after the bus dropped me off and we're still unpacking things in the house. There was a box in my room to put away. And in that box, there's some gifts. My dad was a pastor at a church in Michigan and now we moved to a new one and people had given gifts to us. And I, as a freshman boy, got a book, a devotional. And I was thankful for that, but really, I didn't like to read. So I didn't really think about it. But this right here was the title of that devotional. It says, if you can't see it, it says, if God loves me, why can't I get my locker open? I want to let you know that maybe for the first time in my life, I felt seen and heard by God. He had this book in a box for me before I even needed it, before I even know I needed it. Maybe we can circle back to the women that are in the room. Women who aren't mothers or who are anticipating motherhood or who have experienced pregnancy but have no children or no living children. This may be something you chose, but it also may be something you didn't choose. Let me just let you know that your identity is not tied up in what you are not. It's not tied up in the expectations of you or others. You have a role to play. You are valuable because who you are and who sees you. Women who are experiencing motherhood that you planned and pursued, or you didn't plan or didn't pursue. You may be wondering if this is what's best for you. Is this really going to make you more like Jesus? Can you do this, and can you do it well? Will this season define you? You have a role to play. The season may seem long, but you are valuable because of who you are and who sees you. Women who are in the middle of raising children with your spouse or raising children by yourself, you may be so tired. Tired of sacrificing and serving. Maybe wondering if you're going to lose who you thought you would be altogether. You have a role to play. A season to play it. And you're valuable because of who you are and who sees you. Women, you're raising days of children, raising children are past and you're enjoying it, or maybe they're past and you're wondering where you fit now. You're done raising your kids and maybe you feel like you're overlooked or undervalued, or maybe even not remembered because you're not that mom anymore. You have a role to play. You still have value because God still sees you. We can't always see what is happening and what God is doing. But we know from this account that we can know God has a design, that he has a plan, and that he can see and hear each one of us. I don't want to in any way minimize or trivialize the pain that you may be going through. I don't want to do that. I just know that there is a God who sees. And I want to remind you of that today. You can declare over your situation, I am not alone because God sees me. And I am not alone because God hears me. This declaration doesn't eliminate your circumstance. It elevates you and it elevates your God. I want to have you listen to one of our very own mothers, Amber, as she talks about her experience with motherhood and how God met her in each one of those seasons. So go ahead and give your attention to the screen.
So I've been through many seasons as a mom, and I was married pretty young. I was a mom to Philip by age 22 and Dory by age 24, and I really enjoyed being a mom to them. But when we tried to have more kids, I had miscarriage after miscarriage, I think 3 or 4 miscarriages. This is a really tough time for me emotionally, and even though God had blessed me with 2 beautiful children, I really struggled to know why this was happening and what God was trying to teach me through this, but I knew that he was with me through everything, and I just really tried to trust him through everything that was going on. When Philip and Dory were really young, my husband became mentally ill, and it was very tough time trying to juggle, you know, motherhood and caring for a sick husband. And even though there was a lot of stresses and things going on in my life, I knew that that wasn't a license for me to sin. And God really brought back verses from when I was a teenager. I relied heavily on 1 Peter 5:7, and it's cast all your cares upon him because he cares for you. And I knew that through all of this, God never left me. He was there. He really wanted me to just share my heart and to talk to Him about what was going on. I know that God is a great conductor, and I know that He was directing my steps through everything, and I know that He was preparing me for my future through all of my trials that I was going through. God was teaching me a lot through this time, just that I needed to come to Him and talk to Him through the pain and the things I was going through. And my husband did improve, but for the next 5 years after, I did a lot of parenting alone. And it was at this time that I began serving again at church and reading my Bible on a consistent basis. I know God doesn't always give us the answers to our whys, but I understand now that He was preparing me for my future. In 2008, my husband became severely ill again, and he disappeared. 5 months later, we found out that he had passed away. And it was just 7 days prior to his disappearance that I found out again that I was pregnant with Brayden. God knew that I needed Brayden in my life. He allowed me to carry him to term. So I was a widow, single mom of three. I was homeschooling with a newborn, but I had a really good support system. And I knew that in that place, in that moment, God saw me and that He was with me every step of the way. I can share with you story upon story of unexplainable peace and provision that He has given me through this time in my life. As a mom, my heart was broken for my children and for the future that they wouldn't have with their father. I know now that I could have done a better job helping them cope, but I am so, so thankful that God is the ultimate healer and that through my brokenness and my sinfulness, God was there for all of us through our family and friends and our community. God allowed me to remarry Andrew, and He took my children as His own, and He loved them as His own. And then He blessed me as a mom once again with Aaron in 2013. There's a 12-year age gap between my children, and because of that, I am in a rare motherhood stage. I've watched my oldest two grow up and leave the nest, but I still have a 14 and 10-year-old at home. I have felt the joy and the pride and the brokenheartedness of a child leaving home, yet still being in the mundane with dishes, laundry, and wondering what my real purpose is in life. Does God still see me and know me? In new and different ways, He's been telling me yes. I just need to be faithful in what He's called me to do today, whether that's vacuuming, school projects, sports, or wedding planning. He loved me enough to send His son to die so that I can have a new and abundant life with Him. I am no one special. I am an introverted mom of four with little formal education from a small town in Pennsylvania. But I know that God sees me and He has a sovereign plan that He has laid out before the foundations of the earth. So what I want people to know who are hearing my story is that God sees you too. He knows you by name and He loves you. You might not feel it or see it now, but He has a plan for your life. You are not alone. You are not forsaken. You are not forgotten in whatever your motherhood journey looks like. My name is Amber Peterson, and I'm here to make more and better disciples for Jesus Christ.